Exception number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, reel 3.
George S. Richardson, reel 3. Were there any initiation ceremonies at all, first into the army?
No, except for the fact that our NCOs explained to us a little bit about military law, that we also had to bear the civilian law that we'd always had to, plus military law, and anything that we did wrong became military law, and because we were at war, our charge always started at war while on active service, and that was the beginning of the charge sheet. Our corporal explained this to us right from the start, and told us that any command that was given to us by an NCO became a lawful command and we had to be.
Was there any gambling in the billet?
We didn't have enough money. We used most of our weekly pay to buy things like cleaning equipment, soap, razor blades. I remember just, as soon as I'd been paid out on a Friday, I would go and buy myself a quarter of sweets for about tuppence, and that was about the only luxury I had. We didn't have any ration certificates as such, the way the civilians did, but we used to be able to buy things like that in our local navy store.
You'd be comparatively well educated compared with some of the lads in the unit. Was there any kind of jealousy or animosity?
No, I don't think so, because I didn't bring that out. I more or less was speaking the same kind of voice that they were speaking in. We were mostly all from the same area, Durham, although there's various different ways of talking, even Geordie. But my accent was never a strong Geordie accent, because I'd come from round about the Shiny Row area, which is halfway between Sunderland and county city of Durham, and just a little bit further to the north, the twang was a little bit more stronger Geordie, and down in Sunderland, well, the dialect was a lot, couldn't even understand what some of the East Enders said. The dialect was that strange. But because I'd learned fairly good English, and I'd gone to through to learn English, maths, and science, and technical drawing at Sunderland Technical College, I mean, taught by masters who had done a lot of education, then our language is more or less fairly good English.
Was there any educational lessons that you had to take in the army?
No, not until nearly the end of my career, and then I did some. But the lessons that we were taught were mostly from the drill books, and in the first few weeks, that took us up to 8 weeks of my training. And after we'd qualified as our first recruit training, we were given a final leave pass and told to report back to Meadowfield advanced training.
Before we go there, we mentioned the uniform that you were issued. What equipment did they give you?
Yes. We had leather equipment. The rifle, pouches that we had, ammunition pouches, belts, straps, and small haversacks were all leather. And we were told to get some good leather, soap, and leather them up and keep them up clean. Because we had strong leather, it was very difficult at first to do such things as present arms. They were very hard, and we had to polish the brasses on them, which were brass. And so we had to spend quite a lot of our time in the evenings keeping our equipment clean. We had rifle inspection every morning, open the bolt, put our right thumbnail into the bolt hole, and the NCO corporal would look down and tell us to go and clean it and report back. And of course, if we had a dirty rifle, you want to charge for another day.
How did you keep your rifle clean?
Well, we had pieces of 4x2, which the corporal would issue when we needed. We had a pull through, and old pieces of 4x2 that were getting a bit worn, we used to just lightly oil them from the oil bottle in the butt of the rifle and just rub them over, and that kept the wood nice and shiny on the rifle butt and the 303 rifle, which was a short lay and failed.
What about your equipment inspections for the other, for your kit inspections?
Oh yes, that was once weekly. Saturday mornings, we had to lay everything out, and the sergeant and the colour sergeant, the sergeant with the crown on top, would come around and check his list and make sure that he had everything there. And we had to lay it out. There was a drawing with a set pattern that our equipment had to be laid out. Our spare pair of boots had to be laid with tongue and everything tucked inside, studs up, and the studs were checked that there wasn't a stud missing. If there was a stud missing, then you got it ticking off and told to report to the corporal and have it put in. We had to have a haircut at least every 2 weeks, but as a rule, we'd be marched up as a squad, en bloc, shoved into a chair, and a couple of cutthroat barbers would just whip our hair off and just leave us with a little bit fringe and a little bit on top, right down to the skin, basic haircut. And every weekend before they sent us home, after the first weekend, they would give us an inoculation, open our pay book, write in it, and tell us what kind of inoculation I had. I think all told, I've got 18 inoculations and 3 vaccinations in my pay book for my war history.
Did these affect you physically in any way?
The first ones, no. They were just anti-tet, mostly. But later on, when we were down at Brownie Colliery, after about 2 weeks of signal training at Brownie Colliery, we had to report to the headquarters office, was at Meadowfield in the British Legion. British Legion Hut was the company headquarters of the further training. In that company, there was a single training, which was a platoon of about 30 of us. There was the MT, which was based in Meadowfield for learning drivers. There was the carrier-based training, which were up at Brandon, along with the 3-inch mortar training, which was also up at Brandon. But for weekly inspections and company commander's inspection on a Saturday morning, we had an FFI after pier. They would give us our weekend leave pass, but before we could go home, we had to have a job. And I think the first job I had that really hurt was for typhus. I got on the bus at Meadowfield, and by the time I got to Durham, I felt real sick. By the time I got back, the bus took me to Herrington Burn. I had about half a mile to walk home, and when I got in, dumped my kit bag and rifle, which you always had to take home. Your personal equipment was carried there wherever we went on leave. dumped them down, and they said, "What's the matter, George?" I said, "Oh, well, I've had an inoculation." And she said, "Do you want anything?" I said, "No, I want to go to bed." She put me down in the front room. The next thing I knew, it was Sunday dinner time. She said, "George, I've got a roast beef and Yorkshire pudding. Do you want anything to eat?" And I woke up and had a good meal and went back that night. And it was really rough. It was the roughest inoculation. It never happened again. After that, inoculations were just a matter of taking them in half an hour, 2 hours at the most, and it went. That was it. I was just full of bugs. And
in your first 6-8 weeks of training, did you have any duties to perform?
I only had to do one guard duty at company headquarters. I was looking forward to doing a guard duty because it was something that we'd trained to do, but we never got the chance of standing there in front of the general crowd that was passing, marching up and down like a sentry. I'd never had it until, I think it was the 7th weekend, I didn't get a pass, and because I'd been put on guard duty. And we had a guard of 12 with a sergeant, a corporal, and a lance corporal. And we were at company headquarters, and we just more or less went through the guard drill that we'd been taught, and it was 2 hours on and 4 hours off, all through for 24 hours, and then that was it. I didn't do any more guard duties then for until I joined the battalion, because at Brownie Colliery we were all concentrating on single training.
Do you recall any of the men who joined with you?
Except for Harry Richardson, who I later met in the signal training, I can't. Except for a corporal we had two corporals. One was Slater, and there was another one come that was a regular man, and he must have been taken into a battalion. But he came into the 6th Battalion. I saw him as a sergeant in charge of a platoon. He had been a corporal, he'd been promoted to sergeant, and been, this was after Dunkirk, 6th Battalion was cut down to only a few hundred men and had to be reinforced. I was one of the reinforcements. Well, 400 Targa and Southern Highlanders came down from Stirling Castle as our other reinforcements, and I saw this corporal. But I don't think he went abroad with us. I think he stayed with us down the south, but I don't think he went abroad. He had been a long-term serving soldier, but there were very few. There was only our signal sergeant. He was a long-time 1st Battalion man. He had crossed flags above his stripes, which denoted that he'd been on a full course, and as a trainer, instructor, and that was Sergeant Scott.
You mentioned your corporals or your NCOs as being frightened of them, felt that they were bullies. In effect, did you feel that they were actually bullying you, or was it just part of their normal routine?
We took it that was the way that we had to learn to be soldiers. We had to learn to be tough. We knew that someday we were going to have to be tough and fierce, the enemy, and so we just took it that was the way we had to be taught. I did, I suppose. In the early days, it was often somebody tried to have a fight with an NCO, and he usually finished up in detention because we knew this would happen. But very few in my recruit days. It happened once or twice, I know, in some of the other lads that were doing 2-inch mortar, 3-inch mortar, and other kind of training. I know there's one or two who went up. The company commander of our training company for the specialist training often had locks up, but they're mostly just CBA charges, they wanted detention charges. And I never knew of anybody during my recruit days had to be court-martialed for anything
After 8 weeks, you said it was 8 weeks.
Yes.
You moved elsewhere. Where did you go then?
Yes, now, at the end of our training, we were told that you're now trained soldiers. You can fire a rifle, you can fire a Bren gun, and you know what the army's about. The sergeant took us in, Sergeant Slater, took us in to his office and interviewed each one of us in his squad. And he wrote down what he wanted him to go on to. Some went on to further infantry training, increment infantry training. Some went on to motors driving. And he asked what I'd done in civilian life, and I told him I was being a Boy Scout, and he said, do you know anything about Morse code or 7 forces? Well, a little bit, yes, I've learned it in the scout manual. So I says, right, signals, and then at the end of our 8 weeks, we were given a leave pass and told to report back to company officer at Meadowfield. Reported back to Meadowfield with all our equipment, and we were taken down to Brownie Colliery, marched down there by a corporal into, I think it was a little chapel or an institute that was our billet just below the Brownie Colliery Workmen's Club. We used the Brownie Colliery Workmen's Club. They had two baths upstairs, and we used to have a weekly bath there. But we had to put a penny in the meter to get a bath. Well, on arrival down in Brownie Colliery, we were given this billet, and for the first time, we were given fold-up beds, which were camp beds, fold-up camp beds, canvas on the base. We had a full palliasse of straw to put on the camp bed. We had three blankets, and we were more or less a lot more comfortable than what we had been at Willingdon as recruits. The sergeant in charge of our training, can't remember the sergeant that trained us first thing, but he was a regular army man. He's two corporals of regular army and two lance corporals, and they were fully trained instructors, because their cross flags at the war were above the stripes on the right arm, and they told us that if we qualified at the end of 12 weeks, we would receive cross stripes, and that would be put into our pay books as being proficient in signalling, infantry signalling, and we'd get another threepence per day increment.
So what form did this signalling training take?
Yes. Well, first of all, we sat in classroom with one of the NCOs, wrote up the Morse code in alphabetical order, and we went, we had to go through looking at the alphabet and saying to us, saying to aloud, da-da, da 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 da, and we carried on like it, all saying the same thing. And then when we got to the end, say, all right, once more, and we go through that. And for 2 weeks, we had Morse code absolutely drummed into us. But that was probably only a 2-hour session each day. We had to learn how to maintain a field telephone, how to run out field cables from cables which held a third of a mile of cable. Three rails meant a mile of cable, and at the end of the cable run, we had to, at the end of each rail, we had to learn how to join the cable, wrap it with adhesive tape. We were issued with pliers for that purpose, an extra piece of equipment. We also had to use our jackknives, which had only been ornaments until then. We had to use our jackknives for stripping cable, and we learned how to join cables correctly. And then we would learn how to use the field telephone by both radio, telephone, talking, and it also had a key which we would practice sending messages. First of all, from one room into another, they would split us up into about 12 pairs and signal backwards and forwards on the field telephone.
Were there any radios at this time?
No radios, whatever. I didn't meet the radio until I was down in Dorset. we had to learn semaphore, and I took the semaphore a lot easier than I took to Morse. It took me 2 weeks to learn the Morse code so that I could read about 8 words a minute. Semaphore, we had to learn to read it 10 minutes eventually, but I got up to about 12 words a minute. I was pretty good at semaphore. Signal lamp, we had to learn to read signal lamp, Morse, and I found that my eyes could, at first I was getting the signals backwards. You read, instead of dash dot for N, I would say A, which is dot dash. You see, and one or two of the opposites on the lamp, it seemed to come in reverse order for some reason, I don't know why. But afterward, of course, we had to learn to read. One would face the lamp, the NCO would be half a mile away sending it, one would be reading it, the other would be looking the other way and writing it down with the message pad on his back. And he would say, B, O, L, D, be bold. Write down, pause, N, I, C, E. And they didn't used to send ordinary messages, but they used to send it in four-lettered code so that we couldn't guess at and fill in letters in words. We had to learn to read like BXUY, ZQUD, and we'd carry on like that in four letters codes and write down on message pads. Of course, at the end of the session, we had to hand it in, the sergeant would look at them and to either call us bloody fools or say, well, you're not doing bad. But eventually it came. It was hard work, but I thought it was worthwhile. I really got interested in signalling. When I thought, I became pretty proficient. We had to pass out the 12 words a minute Morse code, and I think my speed got up to about 16 at that time. Later on, after we'd joined the battalion and we were sent with the Royal Corps of Signals for training, I got up as far as 18 words a minute with very few mistakes. Semaphore, because it was very physical, 10 words a minute was pretty good. If you got up to 12 words a minute, your arms are really going. And instead of PT, every morning, the sergeant or one of the corporals would get us out in PT kit with two flags each, and we'd say, twice through the alphabet, begin. And we had one lance corporal out in front going through the alphabet, and we would go through the alphabet, not saying anything, just going on, hug, be a Charlie dog, easy fox, and going through, and that was all physical jerks. Twice through the alphabet on semaphore. So, and of course, the J and numbers on and numbers off were all had to be filled in because J is out of sequence with the rest of the semaphore. I don't know if you know any semaphore, but later on when I tried to teach Boy Scouts and Girl Guides after the war, they always found it difficult to get the alphabet and put the J in, because the J is out of sequence. I don't know why they made a semaphore like that. I think it was explained. But
the field telephones, were they particularly efficient?
Oh yes, the one that we're taught with is the ones that we used right way through our days in reeling them out between companies. Company commanders had a field telephone on his desk. We were also had the fuller phone. We taught the fuller phone, which had been invented towards the end of the First World War by an officer called Fuller. And that scrambled the message so that if an enemy teed in, he only heard scrambling. He couldn't hear the message.
This was a mechanical device.
This was called a fuller phone. We learned it towards the end of our training at Meadowfield at Brownie Corrie, but we had one down. I think we only had one in our battalion, but I think they fell out of use because they weren't really. I don't think they were really efficient, and by that time they were beginning to bring in wireless.
So you never got to use the one.
Not the fuller phone in action now. I remember we had an order issued while we were in Normandy because there was a river passing through and we had lines across the river that the enemy could listen into telephone calls, and we had to make sure that cables weren't put underneath but over the top of rivers so that the water didn't interfere with the signal going through. Apparently they had listening devices that could do that. I've never seen one. We found up in the desert we came across a lot of German signalling equipment. Their field telephones are a lot lighter than ours, and I would say a little bit more efficient. The Morse key on it was smaller than the field telephone that we used, but basically ours was good, robust equipment, made of metal case and good, strong handset. We were taught how to take the handset capsules out. If they got damp, we had to shake them because there's charcoal inside. If they got stuck together, they didn't operate. Apparently, the sound waves go through loose charcoal. I suppose you know how they work. And we learned a lot about electricity. I already learned a lot about electricity at Technical College in science labs and things like that. But we learned quite a lot about how telephones worked, how to maintain them, change the batteries, and line maintenance. We also had 12 plugged, what's the name for them? Exchanges, a 12-line exchange where we could put 12 lines in the back and operate them. One to each company, one to the MTO, one to battalion headquarters, and usually all 12 lines were soon taken up in actual practice. But of course, we had to learn to use them first, and we learned our own training. Eventually, after the end of 12 weeks, we were taken to Bransworth Castle, and a signal officer from the Royal Corps of Signals came to us, and he had a set army training schedule, and each of us had to go through, send and receive a message at a minimum of 12 words a minute, and I think it was a minimum of four mistakes for Mars, and I think it was 6 mistakes for Semaphore, and the lamp Morse, I think there was about 8 mistakes on lamp. It's a little bit harder to watch a flashing light to differentiate between the dot and the dash sometimes, and that depends on the sender also, because the way electric works, I mean, once a light's gone off, you sometimes still see it. I suppose you know that. anyway, that's why you sometimes get accused of being a payer. Something like that. So we became efficient signalers, and I was given my cross flags, and that was entered into my pay book as being an efficient signaler for infantry purposes in the Durham Light Infantry. And we should have then join our battalion. But because of the action on the Dunkirk evacuation, we had 2 weeks where we were put on guard duties, but we had to look after troops coming in from the Dunkirk evacuation to re-equip them down in Brownlee Colliery. We had to stand guard on roadblocks. We had to guard our empty section because all our wagons were all stationed in one big compound. Had to be patrolled and guard duties as patrol guards around them because we were fighting in case if there was any invasion drop, then of course they would want to transport as soon as possible, and we were told that we had to guard that.